Hi, my name is Nariba Shepherd.
And I'm Justin Arnett Graham.
And this is Terms of Service.
Here we go.
Just had to keep it classic for a second.
I mean, you know, these are the things that we have to do.
Yes.
So we're back.
Yes.
Obviously. We're here at night, and it's just like, it's different vibes.
It's different from 8 a.m. on Sunday morning,
this
for sure.
This is entirely true.
110%.
True. Yeah, so... Yep. So
this is the
go.
Opposite of I am showing up for brunch shift energy.
Right. And also, I'm saying that, like, we're back. Let me just go ahead and say this. It's just like, we're now here
yes.
at a different time, but back at our home studio at Blind
Barbara.
It's
going to seem like reverse times when the episodes come out.
It is going to be reverse times, but it's still going to be at
we're
this
in the
time.
Future past.
We're in the future past.
Yes.
That is correct.
Heard.
So with that, how are you doing?
I am... very excited to be here.
Same.
I feel like we've been trying to make this moment blossom for a minute.
Yes, we have.
And it's finally here.
Yes.
Feeling great. Ready to do this.
Wonderful. I feel entire honesty and truth in
yes.
that. Yes. So,
like
thank
the
you.
End of Arthur, when they finally admitted to all of us that Francine is gay and DW is 110% a cop.
You know, thank you for that.
Did you not know about this?
I did not know that.
I thought you were on TikTok now.
Well, so my For You page has been hyper curated. So I think I might have missed that. And for those of us that have been with Terms of Service for quite a bit of time.
Justin's account was not hacked.
It was not hacked. No.
He just found TikTok.
Yeah, I'm a big, big fan. I'm not a big fan about having the app on the phone because it is a true time suck, but I'm not mad at it. It is what it is. If you follow, this is Biko on Instagram. The stories, it
are
is what
in
it
fact,
is.
Justin.
Yeah, I'm just like, you know, big, big bopper flop energy. 110%. We're going to get into that. But with all of that is to say, we have this wonderful, wonderful guest with us.
A true gem.
Before I introduce this lovely guest, I would like to completely acknowledge that if it wasn't for this guest,
110%.
Terms of Service may not have even existed.
I just want you to understand yeah. the impact that yes. you have on this.
I just like, okay, so fun fact. Yeah. I'm going to jump in for a second yeah. here. Yeah. When I saw the like rundown
Wait,
of-
name, what, tell us who you are.
You're not even going to introduce me. I have to introduce myself.
You, yeah, well, we yeah. ask you to introduce yourself.
Excuse me, everyone. We are with the Ursula Syker here.
One and
okay.
only.
The one and only.
Okay. Hi, I'm yes. Ursula Syker, and I would like to jump in here to say, yes. when I was reading the rundown of the episode and like what, like briefly what we're going to be talking about, I literally forgot that I introduced y'all. And I was like, I get to take credit for this right now? And I yeah. already had forgotten. I mean, it was a while ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
110%. Yeah, it felt like
many lifetimes ago.
I mean, a lot's happened. Let's yeah. be fair.
For 2 years?
I sure. absolutely yeah. forgot.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
welcome.
Yeah.
yeah.
Thank you. And I'll never forget you like sending that text like, is it okay if like, and I was like, oh, for sure. Absolutely. They can come out
of
studio.
I was like, you're gonna think it's going to be great. It's going to be great. You're going to get along, I swear. Like, I was like, yeah, I don't know. Like,
and I mean, yeah. a tale as old as time.
I did see that.
Yeah. At least none of us are poor, unfortunate souls.
When I went to Disney, that was my favorite thing that I did was the Little Mermaid ride. Not going to lie.
There's a little but Disneyland?
At Disney World?
Oh.
Yes.
You got to specify. I'm from California.
Sorry.
I default to the land.
That's fair. It was yeah. my first time going to Disney.
I don't really
Disney.
Know the difference, but Florida's not for me, so whichever one's in California, I'm all about.
Listen, I made my boyfriend's sister take a picture of me taking the knee with Trident. Not Trident. What's her
King
dad's
Triton?
Name? King Triton. Thank you.
I was like, Trident?
He has a Trident.
Yeah, I was just like, if the gum company is listening, feel free to reach out to us at connectedterms.media.
Listen, why do you have to be a lint liquor that's Orbit, but whatever.
Oh my God, I completely forgot about that ridiculous commercial. And yeah, that's so not Trident. That's Orbit. Yeah. Anyway, go on, Nariba.
Oh, that was it. That was me going off. But okay, I will, a follow-up question. What's your sign?
You want my like my basic rundown of the chart? Because I think it all
if
matters.
If you have that information, go
yeah,
off.
We'll be here
okay,
for
so
all of it.
I'm an Aquarius.
Yes. Yes.
Which obviously. Everybody knows about me from having just been in a room with me yes. for 5 minutes.
Yes.
But I am a.
I am loving this streak of like Aquarius energy that we have been having. Thank you. Thank you.
It's still Aries season. My birthday's
thank you
on Friday.
For
you're welcome.
Bringing that.
Well, your birthday was a while ago, as of.
I mean,
yeah, with the, now
yes,
time.
Oh. But. We live in real time
for the crown.
But we, no. But we live in real time for birthdays because yeah. Justin's cousin pointed out that we did not say happy birthday to him on a recording day
last year.
Last year,
yes,
see, it lives
true.
In his brain.
I mean, you know what? It's
so
there rent free, but it's
here.
Okay. It's okay. You know,
in my birthday
I,
till
I was
June.
Like, I still turn that age, and yeah, the world just keeps on spinning. And
sure.
And with that, Ursula. I met you.
No,
I,
the rundown.
Oh, yes. No.
Wait, but also just, yes. I'm a Cancer rising and a Virgo moon. Thank you. Now
yes.
we can move on.
Okay, so
oh,
you're
well,
part of the Virgo,
means.
You're part of the Virgo loop that happens here. A lot of the people that have come onto this show have it either as a rising or a moon.
Does
and
that
we're
mean
both the, Virgo can, risings.
So does that mean we're neurotic? Did someone say that?
Yes, lists,
okay.
Being neurotic as fuck. Basically, Virgo is like your on button. Like when you need to be on, that's like the driving force.
Oh.
It keeps it all together.
Yeah, but I'm a secret Virgo because I'm
yeah.
a moon, so it's like very
yeah,
different.
It's the way like, your brain goes.
Yeah, like I present very
present.
Like out there vibes, and then internally
like-
I'm like, order, structure, leave me alone, don't talk to me.
I feel like your huh. Cancer is being overridden by your Aquarius in a way because like...
Did I say I was a Cancer rising? I'm a Leo rising.
You, oh, yay! Oh!
I feel like...
Oh, shit! No!
I don't know what just happened.
That's, okay, so I have
well,
a contentious...
that triggered Nariba. That's
I have
exactly
a contentious
what it,
relationship
yeah.
with Leos. It's not
a
your
crazy
fault.
Crazy contentious relationship with Leos. It is... fascinating to watch over our friendship
but
and professional
makes
relationship.
It makes sense that you are a Leo rising based just solely on your Instagram presence.
I think so too. I think people think they have an idea of me that's very inaccurate and there it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's
interesting.
I still love you and I still appreciate you and we will be friends
because oh,
you're,
you
you're not like a full
it.
Leo.
Fine.
You're not a full Leo.
I feel like every time you say that, I always have to be like, we don't have anything against Leos over here. It is what it is.
Literally what it should be.
What it should be.
My silence speaks volumes.
Yeah, I'm just like, oh, we're just going to go ahead and, you know, kind of amp up the music at that point. But so...
I don't want to like, you know, what is that term where you like exclude people from something?
Exclude?
Yeah.
No, there's a, well, yes, but like there's
order.
Another one. I just.
You don't want to stereotype. You
I
don't want to, you
yeah,
don't want to
don't
paint with a wide brush.
I don't want to do that to Leos, but like send someone to me that is a value.
Well,
I said it.
Well, on.
As a fire sign, I can say that. Sagittarius has got my back. It's like the TikTok where the like, two girls are trying to sing Say Something, Say So by Doja Cat.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third person that comes in is the Leo. It's like Sagittarius and Aries doing their thing. And then the third person tries to come in and they don't know what they're doing. And they're just showboating. That's a Leo.
Okay.
You're not the same different. Sorry.
So the only thing that I can contribute to that logic, thank you so much for sharing, Nariba.
You're welcome.
Is someone that I used to date a long time ago.
You dated a Leo? I did too. Poor unfortunate soul.
And you know what?
Little Mermaid.
That's no. It's just it's fascinating to go on this whole like Leo journey with you, Nariba, because it seems to land at the exact same
It will
spot.
Be the rest of your life.
But yeah, okay. I was just like,
I feel like
we're
focusing on the wrong part though. I very much identify as an Aquarius and a Virgo. The Leo thing is
110%.
Just there.
But it's just like the Leo statement is
just,
a trigger.
Okay, so
to Nariba
let's step
over
back
here.
From Leo. I'll go back to Aquarius. What I do appreciate so much about every single Aquarius that I know is that y'all have a fucking vision and you are unwilling to uncommit to that vision in a very specific way.
I mean, like the vision changes every day, but I'm fully committed.
But you're committed.
Also
exactly. That. Yeah. Also that. And that's also what I'm saying. You all have it and you're like, how can I only make this better? It's right. only tweaking for better, not like I'm changing my idea. It's a tweak. Right. For other signs, I feel like scrap it, start over again. But y'all are like, this is what I want to do, but this is how I can make it better. And every step forward is an adjustment to make it better.
Oh, that's such a nice compliment. There's actually, it's wild. There are, I think, 6 Aquarius at the restaurant. It's like a freak of nature thing that happens where we just find each other.
I hired a kitchen of Aries. So like, just fucking happens. You feel the energy and you're like, this is what I can work with.
Yeah, so we're always tweaking. That is definitely accurate.
My question is, are you like the alpha Aquarius?
I think when I'm not in the position of power, I am. And when I am in the position of power, I shy away from it. I like fear being the true leader. Mm-hmm. So it was a really weird dynamic from being like a manager of a restaurant where I was like, this is my shit. This is my domain. I'm going to like lead the masses. And then once I became like the actual like figurehead with ownership, I
of
very
where?
Much... Jeff and Jude's Deli.
Yes, you damn right.
Once I actually became an owner of a restaurant, I immediately threw off any semblance of being like, I'm in control. And it was like genuinely to a detriment to the restaurant initially. So it's wild when it's like, when there's somebody above me, I'm like, fuck this shit. But when I'm the top, I'm like, oh no! Don't make me choose things. Like I don't want to decide. I don't want to do anything wrong. So yeah, it's a weird dynamic for sure.
Well, and it's funny because what I was touching upon a little earlier is I knew of you because you were doing Jeff and Jude pop ups around the city. I think that we might have met just like in passing, however long ago.
It was like dark and late and 5 seconds tops.
Yep.
Was bocce ball involved or?
Yep, absolutely.
How the fuck did I remember
that? Yeah, forgot that you intro'd us, but you remember that. And I think that's fantastic.
Wow.
And so with that, we, you know, really got to know one another when you sat down with us for 6 feet apart at the beginning of the industry shutdown. You
know? Yeah, that was the day that it was being announced. They were like, it was already, we knew they were going to announce that the city was shutting down, but it was, I think the announcement happened an hour after I sat down with you guys. It was scheduled. It was scheduled that day.
Yeah.
And so because I remember driving.
We like recorded that stream. That's part of the intro of that video.
Yeah. So it was like on the books for that conference later that day. And then I was driving over there being like, it's about to get fucking weird. And then I remember just being like really odd being outside. And then they made the announcement like, it's all going away now.
God.
Like an hour later. I think maybe even while it was there. It was really, really close timing to being there.
Yeah. And we sat down with so many different personality types that day. You specifically, like part of your narrative closed out the 6 feet apart video. The way that your energy matched everything, it was just the perfect conclusion because you were talking about, you know, finding who your representative is, contacting your senator. And once you like get that information, you keep calling them to make yourself visible and to actually try and prompt some action for an industry that like no one seemed to give a shit about.
Yeah.
You know? And then I remember that we put like the number to call. It's like,
I was reading off my phone.
Yeah. And it's just like, and you don't stop calling. Okay. Like that's what you do.
I was so young and naive.
It was a great, like, I mean, it ended with like a true call to action.
Yeah.
And you know, something that really stuck out to me about your story at that point, it's, you know, Jeff and Jude's was still like a thing that was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like you still talked about how like it's happening in such like a volatile environment. That was that was wild to hear.
Yeah, because we started building out the restaurant January of 2020. I can't help but laugh about it. Yeah. I mean, because we had signed the lease already. We were starting the build out. Contractors were in there.
But we also didn't know that it was going to be the way that it was going to be.
Yeah, we just didn't know anything. And so when March happened, I was like, I don't know. And so we were like filming that, and I was just like, I mean, I have things
to
do, I guess.
2019?
2020.
Yeah. Or 2020.
I signed a lease in end of 2019. I began construction January 2020.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was, we're still opening.
It's wild. Listen,
yeah.
If you haven't been to Jeff and Jude's, please do it, because I wish I lived closer, because it's still the fucking best matzo ball soup I've ever had.
Oh my God.
110%.
And you.
Like, okay, so I know we touched on this a little bit, but I met you way before I re-met you for In Living Color.
Yes.
And then that's how I met Justin, because we did that thing, and then you did 6 Feet Apart.
Yeah, because In Living Color was what, a month before or 2 months before?
That was in November.
Stop.
That was like the previous year. Like, yeah, yeah, yeah. It was like October or November. Yeah.
I was just like, that was 2019.
Yeah, yes. That was in 2019. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then I just like love that we met in a real way. Again,
yeah,
it came full circle,
because we initially met at what felt like a frat party,
110%.
And even though we weren't at a frat party, and we were just like, we're just on a balcony right now,
we're doing it here. Yep,
And I guess we're just gonna hang out and chat about stuff.
Yeah,
for a while,
we are,
and then not see each other for like 2 years.
Exactly.
Like, this feels great.
And then I was like, hi, I think we met once before at a frat party, and you were like, yes.
For
so
a photo shoot.
Oh, it was
After
a
Living
photo
Color.
Shoot.
After In Living Color. Yes,
that makes so much more sense. And I had,
for those of us that don't know what In Living Color is, outside of
the television show,
outside
of like the 200 people that were there.
No, like, okay, so In Living Color is also a television show.
No, I know, but I'm talking about the event.
What is that? So In Living Color was an event that was hosted by Jennifer Kim and Edwin Perez at oh my God, I sound like a fucking asshole. It's Lula. Oh,
yeah, Lula.
I was
Cafe.
Like, my brain was doing the like connection things. And it was hosted at Lula, and it was about people in the food service industry or beverage, just the industry in general. It was for chefs and bartenders doing exceptional things who are not regular white people.
Yeah.
And it was about culture and also about ethnicity.
Right.
And so, like, it was a curated event. I did doubles as my, like,
wow. So that is great,
oh,
because
my God,
we have been talking about me trying to get a double for I don't know how
Where
long.
Where were you that day?
Wow. Well, back in, what was that, October 2019?
Yes.
Let me roll back my calendar and find out exactly what I was doing that day, because it's definitely there. But it's just a casual shout out to Nariba and me still craving a delicious double from Trinidad.
I mean, maybe if you had time to come over to my apartment and I just like made you some food.
I feel like we're going in an entirely different direction, but we will figure that out. And I promise you, before this episode drops,
it's gonna happen.
It will happen.
Okay, good.
Promise.
Okay.
Fingers crossed. I was like, the whole thing, you know?
Make it happen. I should just make a single double and take it to my birthday party and give it to you.
On your birthday, you're giving
it. Exactly.
Oh, no, I just feel like, you know, me craving this double for so long, it just makes me want to be a part of your world.
Oh, we gotta get the rights to that song.
We gotta do it. Gotta do it. So I'm like, that's just what it is. And so, Ursula, because I cannot stop with the Little Mermaid
references.
It's fine.
Yeah,
it's
no.
fine. I'm sorry. We'll figure it out in post. But so, but at this moment, so when this episode drops, and just in general, just like right now, people feel like the pandemic has an expiration date. You know, it's just like, we're kind of over it. So it's just like, fuck it. It's kind of what. It is what it is. Like, how do you feel about that? How have you like positioned your business and your restaurant within that mentality? Have there been any struggles? Has it
but
kind
also
of just
like
been
yourself?
Yeah,
just exactly. like
Well, we're such a pivot restaurant. I think something that I will touch on a lot is that I identify as the restaurant, and I'm really desperately trying not to do that anymore. So like but it is very much something that like I know it's not. No, it's not over. I mean, as we speak right now, cases are going up. Hospitalization is kind of staying similar. But the thing about the service industry is, like, regardless of the fact of if you need to be hospitalized or not, your body needs to be present for it to work.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so we currently, at this very moment, have one person that tested positive and is out for the week, and one person whose partner tested positive and is figuring it out. And so we have a ton of protocol in place for what we do, because when Delta hit, we were one of the first restaurants in the city that had a breakthrough case of somebody that was fully vaccinated. And was during that really fun month where we didn't wear masks anymore. Like, do you remember how fun that was?
Yeah.
It truly felt like we did it.
Yeah. But also, I feel like I had to put mine back on because this face is expressive and I completely forgot how much I was hidden behind it. Mm-hmm. And people would be talking to me and they're like, are you okay? And I'm just like, no. I'm not, because I don't actually like what you're saying to me right now, but I completely forgot that I don't have this mask that's hiding half of my face.
Like, it's at the grocery store when I walk in with a mask on, people look at me funny.
I couldn't even handle that. The first time that I did that, I was like, someone to talk to me. Because also, don't talk to me too close, because I felt like I was breaking some rule while still trying to be compliant.
Yeah.
You know, so like that was a weird.
I'm just a mask on person all the time. I know there's like a whole like song about masks being off.
Yeah, but Future. Like, boo. Go on.
I know.
Yeah.
Not a bop.
Yeah.
Definitely a flop.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, I wear my mask indoors always, all the time. Same. I've just felt comfortable wearing my mask off, like walking around the streets. Mm. I'm like, oh yeah, this is normal. I'm catching some like fresh air. But then like if too many people walk past me, I'm just like, ooh, this is how I die.
Well, so we're going to finish this conversation.
Anxiety conversation.
Obviously. Yeah. Well, I mean, something to kind of like smooth it out. It's, you know, a wonderful beverage offering from our friends at Rich World Beverage. Thank you so very much, Ryan, of the Garnet team for putting this together. So it's Ritual Whiskey Alternative with mint, honey, ginger syrup, and lemon juice. And the reason why I dropped that there is because, you know what? We were talking about some unsavory things, and this is a nice little sweet offering.
It's like...
That was seamless.
Thank you.
It like gives me a glimmer whiskey sour a little bit.
Yeah.
And what I like about Ritual is that their whiskey has a like vanilla-y note. Mm-hmm. And I always know when I'm drinking it.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Well, also, I want to take this moment to cheers to the fact that, like, Ursula, that you're here. Like, I'm so excited.
Yeah,
because, like,
it's been so long.
No, it's okay, but, like, honestly.
Cheers.
Cheers, yes. Or as they say in the furniture business.
We're on. Go ahead.
Cheers.
Yep.
So, there we go.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know. It's good. It's, it's the chuckle from deep down.
It's
inside.
A tradition.
It's a tradition.
So, I think I just don't get the joke yet, and I'll laugh about it later.
Wait. Okay, no.
Justin's about to explain it
to you.
Hold
on. You're not actually going to explain chairs to me.
Yeah. So, as they say in the furniture business, because the furniture business does what? They also
make couches.
Chairs. But they also... I can't. I'm so offended that you took that. I'm so... But you know what?
Yes. Thank you.
If you're going to go off of a bit into a riff, I'm going to step on your lines. 100. That's just what's going to happen.
Have you not been on Instagram?
Okay. I know. And you know
Room
what? You know
what?
I'm rebranded.
I was like, who the fuck is this bitch? And then I was like, same Bobby Hill.
I completely respect the fellow Aquarius in the room. Okay. So I will let you take that from me. And I'm just going to try again later.
I really, really, really want a Bobby Hill tattoo as we sit here talking about this.
Oh, same.
And I feel like if I get it for the rest of my life, I will think of you when I look at it.
That's so just nice.
I was like, why are you looking at me?
Because this is my purse and I don't know you.
Okay.
I don't know you.
I don't know you.
propane and propane accessories. Pocket sand. Oh, such a good show. King of the Hill.
Yeah, that's fair.
So bringing it back.
Yeah, so COVID's not over.
Yeah, it's, no, it's not over. It's still happening. It's not.
So we just, we still do vaccination check, and then we just stopped doing.
How has that been? Because
we, so the thing about being a pandemic restaurant that's actually really nice is that we've been dicks since day one. Like, we've only ever set a precedent of safety, and it's not like somebody's like, oh, this place that I used to love going to now represents differently. It's like, this place has always been up my ass about this shit since day one.
Yes.
So, like, that's really a benefit of being a pandemic restaurant is that,
that's
like,
great.
We've only ever been, like, really annoying with rules. But we still, like, we just stopped doing the wear a mask when you go in just because I think my front of house was so tired of having that conversation just to have them take it off to feet away from where they started.
Yeah.
And it's just like, we had a whole vote on it and they decided we're tired of it. So if there's like data to confirm that they should be putting it back on, then we'll have that conversation. But yeah, we still mask as a team in back of house and in front of house because I got COVID in January and it was like during Omicron and nobody else did. And we were one of the few restaurants, I feel like a third of the city shut down in January so quickly. And we were one of the very few that never had to because we had such intense protocol in place after Delta. So we just are going to keep on keeping on. And
no, that's great.
We'll I mean, I went to Florida in the height of Delta to a fucking water park. So, like, the fact that I did not get COVID was insane.
Well, and I, facts, yes.
I was like, what the fuck is that? But I was also, like, the only person fully vaccinated at that time.
Yeah.
Well, and I,
in-laws.
I guess maybe because, you know, I've gotten older, I'm kind of leaning into, like, you know, my dad vibes to where it's like when I walk into spots, you know, when the mask mandate was in effect, I would ask the host team, I was just like, hey, how are y'all doing? And it's like, you know, pretty often I would go into places that I was familiar with. So it's like, I'm not like this weird dude, but there's this woman that, works not too far from here. After I asked her how she was doing, she like welled up. And she's like, no one seems to like care because like we're constantly getting berated. We're constantly getting like yelled at. We're constantly getting challenged. There's not something that it's just like, you know, it's less about you. It's more about like us, you know.
Just, and also it's not even their rules. They're just like implementing it. I mean, whether or not they like, not to say that they disagree with the rules in general, but it's like they get to carry the brunt of what is happening, and it always, it's such a bummer. So yeah, no, we've always been so aggressive and annoying about COVID policy that like that's been really fortunate where people are like, yeah, that's you.
I feel like that's what they do.
Yeah, like that's just that place.
So with that, we've talked to quite a few female chefs in a multitude of spaces, and how do you feel within this navigation of yours, like opening this pandemic restaurant, also being such a dope personality that I'm such a big fan of. Like, how does, like, how do you navigate those different spaces that you're in? Because being, you know, like a pop-up chef is very different than being, you know, a restaurant owner. Or do they kind of just become one of the same?
Yeah, I mean, also the other thing about it was that I never had a background in cooking. It was just baking, and that's such a different thing. Like, people always ask me, like, how did you learn how to smoke meats? I'm like, well, that's the fucking same as baking. It's all method and process.
Exactly.
And it just takes forever, and it's really, like, methodical. But, like, cooking on the line was something I only learned once the restaurant was already open, which was fun to figure out.
Line cooking, it's literally a different...
Yeah. It's so
like,
different.
Beast.
Yeah.
And I, like, I assumed, I guess, that you had that, like, background, and I only learned that afterwards that you didn't have that.
Yeah, which is where, like, that imposter syndrome kicks in so hard, is that everybody was under this impression that I did not try to paint, but I was like, oh, y'all think that I, like, know what I'm doing. And, like, and they're like, no, but you do know what you're doing. I'm like, how can I say more clearly? I actually don't know what I'm doing. And I'm not doing this as, like, a, oh, pay attention to me and tell me that I'm, like, better than I am, or I'm just being, like, shy about it or whatever. I'm like, no, like, literally, I don't know what I'm doing. So it's been really interesting to figure out how to do all that kind of stuff because, like, there's a lot of what we do at the restaurant that I am really confident in and struggle at like presenting that confidence in. And then there's the other half of it where like I legitimately was figuring it out like on the fly. And that kind of really like helped shape, I don't know. I think I operate under fear really well.
Same.
Yeah. So as like a really good motivator for me. So
yeah, fear is a wonderful motivator.
That's big fire sign energy, just so you know. That's your like Leo rising in effect.
Yeah.
Like the ability to work under any form of duress is a big fire sign quality. Yeah.
It's like one of my least favorite things about me is that it's like my motivation is so much stemmed from just like this really unhealthy environment versus being like, I feel nurtured and therefore I create. It's like, I am so stressed out. I'm going to figure it out now. So
I felt it deep in my soul when you were posting about plating because
I don't know how to plate.
As fully a person who has done everything, whenever it came to plating, I would be like, I am not an aesthetics bitch. Like people think that I am because I like do my makeup real well and I like show up dressed for things. Mm-hmm. But the reason that I date people who are very into aesthetics is because I'm desperately hoping that someone will make me not live like a frat boy.
My partner is so good at plating. Like, he's so talented at it, and he just works in advertising. He's never worked in food.
What he's doing, though. He's advertising your food.
Yes.
Also that.
Yeah.
But he's a writer.
There's some studio styling going on.
No, but it's, like, it's really, really cool because I get to, like, learn so much from him, and I think because he has no constraints of what things should look like because he doesn't work in the industry, he's just like, I just throw stuff down, and there's a little bloop there and a little blop there, and I'm like, it looks beautiful. Mm-hmm. Whereas I'm used to baking, which is a composed element, and it's one and done, so it's very much flavor forward.
I love that you're, like, a baker because that just it stresses me out.
It's so calming because
it's so like
it's science.
And there's a discipline to it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a beautiful discipline to it.
I mean, I always equate baking to learning piano because you have to learn.
Oh, can't do that either.
Well, so like when you're learning piano, you have to do all your scales and really like learn all this like method, and it's really structured, and you start with classical music and these like whatevers. And once you've been at it for a really, really long time, because like, you know, everyone's like baking in such precision, once you've gone through it for long enough, you can start to play jazz and improv, and they're hitting all those blue notes, and you actually have a lot of room to play with. And that's how I am with baking now.
That's
which is
amazing.
So cool. Where you're like, oh,
never,
there's this
ever
recipe.
Heard it like
I'm
that.
Just gonna like change what I want in here because I know what these different things do, and now it's a different chord, and the different chord is a different recipe, and you can always be proven wrong on how something will come out. But oftentimes, like you really can sort of figure out what something's gonna be before it's even in the oven. A really fun thing.
I could never
see like, and that makes me think of. That makes me think of my mother, because like my mom was just very like, you know, oh, it's your grandmother's recipe. Like you put this, you put that, and I'm just like, can follow that easy. Like
that's
I'm
my
just
mom.
Like, I'm like, boom, boom, boom. There we go. Also, my mom is an amazing baker as well. She used to make like these like German chocolate cakes, and I was like, this is swoon worthy, ma'am. I was like, how the hell? And she's like, oh, well, Justin, like, you know, this is a bit more, you know, restrained, but you can still kind of like navigate it within your path. I was like,
I can
who
never.
Are you talking to? I was like, I have no idea.
Which is why
but knowing
I
that,
am
like, you can kind
bitch.
Of play it like that.
Yeah.
It's like,
but that
you
information
have to
isn't
know.
Helpful.
You have to like understand the science
exactly.
of baking
sure.
to
yeah.
do
so
that
it's like,
shit.
I wouldn't tell a stage that or people that are learning how to bake. I'm never like, and then you can like finesse this. I'm like, here's the real like strict rules. Read the recipe. Just do 110%. What it says. And that's fine. Like I'm not trying to overcomplicate it for you, but something that is really fun about like the nuances of baking once you have more awareness of what you're doing is that you really can actually play around with it. And there is a ton of room for changing things up. And it really isn't that precise after all. And you
can
fix things a lot more than you think you
can. I like hear what you're saying, but I don't believe it because I did 3 months on pastry and the pastry chef looked me in the eyes.
But pastry's also different.
Ji-Yoon looked me
so
in the eyes.
So pastry is different than baking?
Said, yes.
Yes, very
and
different.
Said, you could never. And I said, agreed. straight up, because I was like,
like,
this
next
is
station, please.
Not for me.
Yeah, and like, but a pastry is like a lot more like plating and composed things, and baking is like I put this thing in an oven and it's done. Okay. Whereas pastry has a lot more elements of like making like mousses and like all these other things and whatever, and it's a composed plate, and I'm just like, here's the muffin. Yeah. But like back to being like femme industry things, like I definitely, there's in the world of baking and pastry a lot more like female presence, less so on the side of savory, especially with like smoking meats and things like that. And so it has been really interesting because people,
your brisket is amazing.
Thank you. People always, for, I think it makes sense, but there's very often times where people are like, there's no way that you actually do all the things. And I'm like, no, I do all the things.
I'll keep that for myself.
Yes. You're like this.
Yeah, they're like, so you, but you don't like bake and smoke the meats and butcher the things and you came up with the recipes for everything. I'm like, yeah, did you not do that? What? And so that's something that's been really interesting. And I don't think it comes down necessarily that I'm a woman, but also it might play a part, but I think it really mostly comes down to like, who the hell like does all of that? It's,
right.
It's psychotic.
Right. So.
I think that like in my brain, I feel as though if you're going to do it, you have to do all of the things. You know, like, yeah, you have to at least learn all of the things before you're in charge of doing it all, which is why I'm like, I don't feel ready to be an executive chef a lot of the time, even though I did it and it was like not as hard as I thought it was going to be. I just felt like I didn't have enough information to like hold that space.
Yeah, it's, I mean, well, first of all, that's incorrect as far as you're concerned, because you're incredibly talented and could. But I understand what you're saying as far as like, I don't know if intimidation is the right word, but that factor of just like, that's a lot. And you're
like,
never
in retrospect, I know that I'll never know everything.
No, you never will.
But that's like what I thought it took.
Yeah.
To like hold that position.
Well, and also I just like, also you touched upon like, you know, like, you know, femme industry things. I think it's like, I don't know if I'm going to get like some guff about this just from, you know, our audiences. But it's that sort of like gender identity within back of house and like what you're doing. So it's just like pastry is assigned where, baking is assigned where, savory is often designed as more of a like masculine thing, like smoking, yeah, meats and doing things like that, which I think is really important for people to kind of just look at it from like, you know, producing dishes and like making what they feel that they're passionate about versus like what the industry kind of like makes room for them to operate with it.
Yeah. It is really interesting. And even within baking, there's rules because bread is for men.
Yes.
Right.
That's like, yeah, the understanding that, yeah, I was,
it's
like,
heavy. Yeah. it weighs a lot.
It weighs a lot. Can you? Okay.
It's not pretty.
I feel like some of the douchiest people I've met, though, have been guys in bread.
You're not wrong.
And I'm just like, and I remember being like,
I met the nicest person in bread who's in New Orleans, mm-hmm, and he is an avid listener, and
aww,
he is just, mm-hmm, he's wonderful. I'm going to put
Ruben
him out there.
Say,
but yeah,
some,
exactly.
Yes.
But
I want
to get the, like, because like hearing that just wants, it makes me want to give him like the biggest hug because he's like, oh, he's amazing. He's,
I just like,
amazing. But yeah, I mean, that's real.
I had a really like unfortunate like food crush.
I can't help it. I'm sorry.
I had like a food, sorry, like a baking, sorry, crush, and I like wanted to stage and like see what this guy was about and blah, blah, blah. And he turned out to be like the biggest fucking douche in the entire world. And he just, like, the way he spoke about, like, bread and, like, how he was doing it and all this stuff, it just, like, I was like, oh.
Yeah.
It's such a circle jerk. It's insane.
Yeah.
Just,
yeah,
to get an,
yeah,
open crumb, yes, to not be able to hold, yeah, anything on the bread so it ceases to have the purpose it's created for. I don't think the open crumb trend is dying. Thank God. But it's just, like, let's make bread without function. And let's cultivate this to make it,
here,
like, I love a tight crumb.
Yes, same.
Yes.
I want to put things on,
yes,
my bread.
I don't want a, yeah, hole in it and it just like seeps out the bottom like, ooh.
Yeah.
So
I want to stop myself from going further.
So at a, you know, very well-esteemed restaurant that I was a part of years and years ago. I mean, it's defunct, so we'll just call it like it is. L2O, they had an extensive bread program, mm-hmm. right? And so when I started there, actually one of my dearest friends, actually two of my dearest friends, I met like back there because they were part of the bread program. And this individual that I'm thinking about specifically, he went off to LA and like, you know, he's doing some amazing things, but he always kept baking. And correct me if baking and pastry is different in regards to bread.
It's baking.
It's baking. Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can be pastry and know how to make bread, but like the act of bread is baking.
Okay, yeah. Got it. Okay. And so, in LA doing absolutely amazing. And so he said something to me that I thought was fascinating. He's just like, yeah, I don't tell anyone that, like, you know, like I was baking.
Ew.
Yeah, but like, but he wasn't saying, he wasn't saying it in like a negative context. Mm. He was like holding on to the fact to where like that's an additional value that he has. Okay. It was never something as like, oh yeah, like I don't fuck with this. It's just like, I love it. But it's just like certain places, they just want to focus on savory. And it's like, and I want to focus on all of it.
Yeah.
You know, and just like he didn't want to be pigeonholed.
Yeah.
And he made it very, very clear. And as I'm thinking about this as well, a chef that I would love to give a, you know, resounding shout out to, because I met her at L2O, Amanda Rockman, who is in Austin, Texas. She taught me a ton about like pastry, so like dessert. And she went on to I believe that they're back again, Nico, and she was like killing it
Gold
there
Coast?
In the Thompson Hotel.
Yeah, it's there.
Yeah. Because for a while I know they changed hands, so like, yeah. I wasn't certain. And so the way that she talked to me about pastry, the way that she envisioned pastry, was like something that I feel like people overlook, because dessert, if we're thinking about pastry, dessert is kind of like, you know, it's kind of a throwaway sometimes, yeah. right? Like either you decide that, you know, you want to get it, or if you don't, you're too full, it's fine. Like you can skip it. Like you can easily skip it because the show is savory, right? Like the show.
Unless you're going to like a patisserie or like.
Right. Right.
You are going to a place specifically for their desserts. It seems to be like for most people an afterthought.
Right. And the fact that it is predominantly, you know, a female, like, you know, like a female centric space. I feel like that speaks volumes into the industry as well, because, you know, if you feel like you can skip dessert, then you can also skip over the feminine contribution within the industry as well.
There's also a lot of times where people are just like, I don't want to put effort into pastry because it's a lot of program and a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But like the places that get the stars, they care about pastry is the thing that makes the difference usually. That service.
Like my first job in Chicago, I was garmanger at Frog and Snail, and they didn't have a pastry chef, and it was whoever was on Garmo was in charge of making
so normal. The
pastry. That was on Fullerton. Like, that was on Fullerton, right?
No,
Frog and Snail. No, I'm wrong. What am I thinking?
It was next to Reckless Records. I want to say on Broadway.
Oh, like in Linkin Park?
No, off of Belmont.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like somewhere.
Because that's how I met Fallout Boy, because I was working Black Friday.
Oh my God.
Black Friday at fucking Frog and Snail and Reckless Records.
Near Broadway and Belmont.
Yeah, shares the alley with Reckless Records. So I met them when they were like leaving because I was smoking a cigarette outside.
Interesting.
Smoking does do cool things for people.
I mean,
I don't care what they say. I quit years ago. I can't do it anymore.
Can't do it anymore. No.
But like, but,
yeah,
I that was the first time that I'd ever been like in charge of creating pastries or like dessert type things. And the first like sweet thing that I ever had to do was an Earl Grey panna cotta with shortbread cookies, because that's what it, but great. It was yeah. so easy. Yeah. Shortbread. It's very hard to fuck up shortbread.
You'd be surprised.
I learned that from other people. I'm like, this is not shortbread. But when people look at the history of my desserts, it's like panna cottas and pudding. It's like things that I don't have to use flour for because I'm bad at that. So
and actually, it's just, you said it, so I have to follow up with it. We were just given another round of ritual beverage, but specifically their gin alternative, which is a play on a French 75. And the reason why I thought it was the perfect time to mention that is because chamomile syrup, lemon juice, and lemon soda.
I do fucks with chamomile heavy.
This is delightful.
Yeah, it's very refreshing.
Yeah, it's just like,
light,
it's good. It's
crisp.
Free. It makes me feel. It's
like
feel
spring
like
is in the air.
So it's like spring is in the air because it is. I don't think Chicago got that memo though, but it is in the air somewhere.
Allegedly.
These are facts. Yes. And so, I think one thing that I definitely want to mention from what I was saying earlier is I don't believe that dessert, pastry as dessert and, you know, baking is a throwaway item in the industry. I feel like sometimes it can be seen as such because it's not pushed to the forefront. Mm-hmm.
I think now I appreciate like getting a really good loaf of bread. Like,
yeah,
my
whole vibe is like, I want like a fresh ass, delicious sandwich.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like I crave that so hard. And like, I will like go and be like, oh, like I'll try this meat and like so on and so forth. But then I'll be like, you know what? This was absolutely delicious. And then I'm barely ever home. So it's like the fresh ingredients that I was like, argh! I was like, it don't last as long as I want it to last, you know? So it's like,
if I buy
I could
bread,
live on cold
commitment.
Cuts for the rest of my goddamn life. Like, that's how I feel right now. Like, just give me some beautiful bread and like some wonderful butter and just like all of that. It's just like, that's my real ass vibe.
My friend just had a whole ass baby, and you know how I feel about babies. Mm-hmm. I love them 110%. And she posted this Instagram story, but her sandwich was so much more appealing than the baby.
Oh my God, stop it right now. Stop it right now.
I messaged her and I was like, but bitch, what's in that sandwich though?
What was in the sandwich?
Hold on.
Oh my God.
She sent me in response.
Well, we have to know if it's better than the baby.
Oh no. Listen, I'm literally going to Naperville tomorrow to like cook food for her and watch the baby so she can sleep more than
that's
2 hours a night.
That's fair.
But well, okay, wait, no. No, I'm here. I've pulled it up.
Okay.
Cajun turkey, deli meat, sliced, lettuce, tomato, onions, Munster cheese, mayo, and a little bit of vinegar and Italian seasoning.
So I'm going to get dragged for this. I feel like tomatoes should be outlawed on sandwiches. That's just me personally.
It's where you're placing them. You're placing them wrong on the sandwich. You got to do the lettuce and then the tomato underneath it. So there's a barrier.
Thank you.
That's what we do at the restaurant.
It's a placement of the tomato. Also, if you're eating a tomato in winter, it will be sad.
This is also true.
Yes.
So when people ask for tomatoes added to their burger when it is wintertime and the chef has taken tomatoes off of it because they respect the laws of nature.
Right.
Get less aggressive, consumers.
Right.
Don't ask for it. It's not going to be good. You'll only complain about it being sandy.
Facts.
Just eat it the way that they put it on the menu between October and March.
Unless you live in California.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
warm
it's
places.
Just like,
then whatever.
It's a countless amount of bounty when you're in California.
If you live in the north, don't be a dick.
You know,
that's all I'm saying.
I know.
Yeah. And so I love the comment about the placement of the tomato because there have been extensive sandwiches that I have had. I'm just like, you know, I keep forgetting that I don't want the tomato, but I never want to be the asshole. It's like, no tomato.
I have a boss that used to like order sandwiches.
But also, it's just like, I want to try it as it was created.
Yes.
Yeah.
Unless you're at fucking Wendy's.
I fuck with a junior bacon cheeseburger.
Okay.
All the time, a JBC. Don't fuck with me. Okay. I was like that.
No, listen, I'm just saying.
JBC all day.
I had a boss that would order his sandwiches at Wendy's and say no tomato. And if there was tomato on it, I would watch him whip it out of the window in the parking lot.
Okay.
So the next guest is coming up to just like floor tomato. Yeah.
We'd be like driving through the drive-thru. I'd hear him say no tomato. He'd get it with the tomato and just like whip it out the window and keep it going. And I'm like,
oh my God.
My move used to be, this is a weird story, but I had really intense orthodontia for like 9 years of my life. I had braces.
Damn.
I know. Wow. Anytime somebody's like, I had braces from like, let you finish that sentence so I can make you feel bad. I was missing my canine teeth for 2 years of high school because of this oral surgery I'd had. And so anytime I bite into a sandwich, a tomato or a pickle would just like, I wouldn't sever it properly. So the whole thing would just like flop out onto my face with like condiments all over it. So yes. I was always like, no tomato. So if they did put tomato on it, I would remove the tomato, salt and pepper it, and then use a fork and knife and cut it up and eat it separately. Because I didn't want to like leave stuff and seem like I was picky.
That's so...
You are a better person than me.
Demure?
I was just scared.
Because that is so... Yeah, that's like...
I'd have been like, wow, you fucked my shit up. I've never sent anything back to the kitchen, but I will be like, listen, I did not order this. I will eat it the way that it is, but
it's fair.
So
I just want you to know for the next person.
So I mean, we gave quite a bit of shine to tomatoes.
Yes.
So
I'm going to start germinating them for my garden.
Ooh.
I would like to
let
hear
me know
more
if
about
you
that.
Need a tomato plant for your porch.
We put them AKA on the back patio, Jeff and Jude's. We had them last year. They weren't a great success, but they grew. We had some tomatoes off of it. We just kept getting too much rain, and then it would like flood out the dirt.
Yeah, and they'd get the like the black bottoms.
That's fair.
It's a new year.
Plants.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Shout out to you, Nariba, for keeping these plant vibes alive.
Listen, don't look too closely at them. It's winter. They're having a hard time.
It's
I don't have any sunlight the way that Ursula has sunlight.
It's spring over here. So it's okay.
I'm just saying.
Fun fact, all the plants inside of Jeff and Jude's are fake except for one.
Is the game to figure out which
one
it is?
Only one is real.
Is that a game to figure out which one it is?
Can I guess? You get nothing if you guess, but you can.
Okay.
Yeah. Is it a pathos on the back bar area?
Gina, we don't
fake. That is fake.
It's fake.
That is not
it's
real.
Fake.
Damn it.
That
it's
is
incorrect.
Not real.
That
is fake. I'm just going to like throw myself over about this fucking...
You gave yourself an air horn when I was telling you that you were wrong.
Yeah, I was like, it was incorrect.
I liked it, though.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. So, moving past tomatoes and fake plants and Nariba being super gassed up because it's her season right now. Ursula.
Yes.
I would love to hear about your thoughts of ethical ownership. And when we have spoken in the past, we also touched upon the need for transparency just throughout the business model.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's funny because I think that like a while ago when we first talked about my coming on and we were talking about things I wanted to bring up, mm-hmm. I brought that up and I afterwards was like, why did I say that?
Okay,
like
no,
talking about that, it's like, because it's so hard to unpack and there's only really wrong things to say on it, truthfully. Mm-hmm. And I feel like since that time of us talking about it, like, I feel like every single week since the restaurant has opened, I've had one ego death after another. Like, it's just like a never ending, just constant cycle of like checking myself and being checked on behalf of myself constantly. And I think a large part of that comes down to literally the idea of me being like, we should talk about ethical ownership. I was like, ego death after that.
Okay.
Cause like, yeah. I mean, cause initially when I opened the restaurant, I was like quintessential white savior. Like, I'm going to fix it. I'm going to like fix the industry. I'm going to be the change I want to see. And I'm going to do such a good job because my intentions are pure. But like your intentions and your execution are so different.
Right.
And I feel like what we were talking about earlier with being like this whole Aquarius thing of like when I'm not in power, I lead. And when I am in power, I shy away. And I think the biggest takeaway that I've had since opening the restaurant as far as ownership and leadership is concerned is like, I started out with no structure because I thought that that was the thing that people needed was to have their autonomy. But what I've learned is that like saving space for people, like space has walls.
You know what I mean? Yep. Like there's like, there has Absolutely. To be like yeah. within a space outside Absolutely. Of the space, there's walls that hold that space in. Otherwise it's just like nothingness forever. And I was doing a disservice to my team and to myself by not having any of those guidelines and any of that structure. So I think my biggest thing that I've learned so far is like intense structure with the purpose of clarity. So like you have rules in place and they're there for a reason, and that reason is expressed, and that way everybody understands thought process. So if something doesn't feel right to somebody, they know your reasoning behind it and they can speak to that and express why they feel differently, if that makes sense.
No, that does make sense.
Yeah, so like that's been, I think, my hardest thing. Like I remember after opening, especially because we opened so strangely and like so slowly, we were just a bakery for a little bit and then we were just to go. And then we started doing indoor dining like an entire year after we opened, and having those like initial full staff turnovers because I wasn't who I promised myself and them that I would be. And my like learning and takeaway from all of that has every single time always been, you thought you were being clear, but you weren't. You thought you were outlining why you were doing things, but you were not. You were giving not too much autonomy, but like you were like pushing autonomy on people in a way that Right. they weren't wanting, and in a way that like they wanted to be able to know their job before they could execute it in their own style.
Yeah, yeah. And I can completely, you know, align with that thinking, because just with all of the work that I've done and like all of the work that I commit to doing, I never, I'm always like, I don't want it to feel corporate. I want it to feel I want it to feel natural. I want it to feel tangible, but I also want it to feel expressive. And it's like, I mean, it's a very fine line to walk that, right? Because, because you want to empower individuality. You want to empower, you know, just like celebration of self with like amongst the contribution of it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you have to ensure that there is a
baseline,
a standard to adhere to, and have people kind of like craft themselves around said standard within said standard.
I feel like it's a very American thing, what you both just explained, because in the food service industry, my experience has been everyone wants to teach innovation, but no one wants to teach the standard. And so like, for example, right now,
the standard is what kind of can fuck you up.
Yeah. Okay. But when it comes to like learning about the industry, and yes, right now I feel like there's a lot of change that needs to be made. I think the teaching methods of how we get people into the rigmarole of cooking is that you have to like understand how to saute. You have to understand how to braise something before you can use a sous vide. And I feel like now, because people aren't braising and everyone knows how to use a circulator, people don't understand how to get out of a problem when they don't have technology to help them. So I would say that my whole standard has been like cavatelli, make it by hand. One day you can level up to a machine, but what happens when your fucking pasta machine stops rolling?
Yeah.
Like braising, great example, traditional, all your flavors. And it gives you a second to like take a breath and breathe, because that's an overnight process, whereas everything that has been standardized now is a shortcut in my mind.
So then it's interesting that we're going down this road, because there's another thing that I, you know, am very curious of. It's if we're looking at autonomy while also like
within structure,
within structure, it almost speaks back to, you know, just us being products of our environment and wanting to rebel against what we have experienced while creating platforms for people to not have to deal with the things that you might have had to deal with because you're like, that shit stops
with
me.
That's so true. Yeah. Because my entire background was I came up only working for women, actually, surprisingly enough. I've never had a male boss.
God damn.
And I know. And I worked for
That's wonderful.
Femme micromanagers. And there was so much about the, like, not being able to let go, not trusting, because it innately made me feel like you don't trust your staff. You don't trust my judgment. You don't trust whatever. Like, I've been doing your job better than you have for whatever kind of an idea. And so much of that I took with me when I opened Jeff and Jude's to be like, I don't want to be that person. I don't want to turn into, like, the quintessential business owner that, like, can't let go. And so I was like, I let go fully. And they were like, but what are we supposed to do? And I'm like, you're smart, figure it out. And they were like, that's awful. And I was like, yeah, you're right. That's awful. And, like, it just took me so long to figure out, like, if you just set forth these specific guidelines and, like, you do the weekly meetings, you do the weekly check-ins, you do the things that nobody wants to do that feel super corporate because you have to just have that annoying level of communication so that everybody knows what's going on all the time.
It's like touching tables, but with your staff.
Exactly, because I will never touch tables in person. nobody knows I'm the owner of my restaurant. It's very tight. But we all look the same age and have tattoos. But yeah, it's definitely something where, like, having those sorts of, like, what I used to deem cringe corporate sort of values as far as, like, there's reasons why those things are in place for large scale environments, and taking the little things from that that actually do create an environment of open dialogue, doing that then gives people the actual opportunity to grow within their position and feel like they're allowed to. Because the other thing that I'm also discounting in the process of not having any rules is that that automatically always feels like a trap for your employee because they're like, you're saying I can speak up. That doesn't feel right. You're saying I can just do whatever I want, but I'll probably still maybe be chastised for this. Like, nothing in the industry has ever dictated, like, you're going to be fine. If you just mess up, people won't scream at you, you know?
Right.
So it's like that
they invented Yelp. That's over.
So it's like one of those things where I was not taking into account the fact that, like, all these people were seeking a different environment away from that kind of, like, hostile things. And so I wound up being incredibly passive aggressive without meaning to by just being like, I don't know, just do stuff. And so now it's just like, all right, we have to do this annoying meeting that none of us wants to do all the time, but aren't we so happy we do, because now we all know stuff. So that's, I think, been, I mean, I don't know. I guess it all ties into, like, ownership ethically, but, like, at the same time, I still have so many unanswered questions as far as, like, what that means for me, because I think my hardest thing also has been, like, put the employees first, put the employees first. But it's solely been to my detriment the entire time. And so I haven't found the balance yet of, like, how do I make my employees' livelihoods matter while not actively, like, hurting myself, like, financially, physically.
So then that begs the question of just, like, so, you know, again, like, owner to owner, like, what is the equity move, you know?
I don't know. Same. I think it's really hard also because I'm not in a moneymaker. Like, I chose a really silly concept to make money in, because Jewish Deli, you make everything in-house from start to finish. And it's not booze-centric and it's not dinner-centric. And, like, the thing about a sandwich is that you can only charge so much for it. But the second you take the bread off and put it on a plate and take half the meat away, you can charge $30 for it.
Damn!
Yeah.
That is a truth right there.
And so it's like, but we raise our corned beef every week. It takes 16 hours.
But the thing is, it, like, people don't think about beef.
Damn, I didn't know that.
And then we hand slice it, so that's just the cook time.
It's fucking delicious. And the thing about bread is that people were, like, quick to be on, I'm doing sourdough in the beginning of the fucking pandemic.
Oh, they love that.
But it's a fucking art form. So, like, if I'm not spending a minimum of,
people,
like, $7 or $8 minimum.
Talking about the sourdough show.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is this? I was like, hold on.
If I'm spending under $8 on a loaf of sour bread, I have questions.
Yeah.
Because it's a craft. And I could never. Literally, I've killed so many starters.
So have I. It doesn't matter. Okay, it's okay. Don't worry about it.
That's really interesting, because it's like, you know, just from the consumer perspective, it's just like, you are expected, or, you know, the goal here is for, like, for you to invest in this craft. You know, it's just like that is what, as an industry, we're asking you to do. Because again, I'm sitting here still being like, corned beef, 16 hours. I was like, and that's just, again, the cook time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, yeah, I'm sure you could have some variation of
corned beef
whatever,
is like,
but it's like you're producing something of quality.
Yeah.
And quality costs.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I can't justify.
Right.
So our corned beef and our pastrami is at a 64% food cost. At the price it is. And my Reuben is $19. There is no way that I can literally charge over $30 for a sandwich. I wouldn't feel comfortable with that either. And so it's a really interesting, like, as far as, you know, me not taking care of myself financially, emotionally, physically, all the different things.
We talk about that frequently.
Yeah. Like in part, it's because I chose something it's currently having a resurgence with Jewish Deli, but it largely has died off because it's not possible to keep that up and pay for your labor and pay for your food. Cause like you have to either have like, you know, cheap food and high labor or the other way around. And like, it's really hard to find that balance of all of them, especially when you're not selling a lot of alcohol. So like our next step is moving into dinner service.
I know, I'm so excited.
To try and like counter that out. But like, it is something that I think a lot of people that are in a position of doing something that's a little bit higher price point with less of the cost eaters that I have, they might be able to strike that balance a little bit better than I currently have. So I do recognize that like I'm in a specific situation of having chosen something that was a really expensive move in the first place, going into a pandemic that then has the cost of all these proteins skyrocketing. And I can't just like not make corned beef at a Jewish deli. Like that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So it really is just like figuring out, okay, these are the standards that are expected of me by guests. These are the standards that I expect of myself with the food I want to make. This is the kind of environment I want to create with like the people that I have work here. I want my people to stay that work here with me and like continue to cultivate that environment. So I guess I'll just be eighth on this like list.
And that's all.
I just want to say also that like it also has a lot to do with where you are.
Yeah.
Because if you were in New York, your shit would be off the fucking chain. Like a Jewish deli in New York, expensive, not expensive, no matter what, is like a godsend. But I feel like in Chicago, if you're not already in that area, it's harder to get the foot traffic.
Well, but then also, I mean, I think that it's really important to acknowledge even like high visibility like restaurant groups. And what comes to mind immediately is Brendan Sotokoff with the now defunct Dillman's, which
I didn't even know that they did that.
Yeah. And that's and this was years ago.
Yeah.
This is absolute like years ago. And that that spot across from Hampton Social and the basement on West Illinois Street by the East Bank Club has changed so many concepts within the Hulk Salt organization. Mm-hmm. But very specifically, it has now changed ownership specifically to something else that I'm not going to reference right now. But it's now outside of that ecosystem. Dillman's became Coachella, which was like their Italian concept for Hulk Salt. And then after that, it became Three Greens Market. And they're like, well, you know, we want like kind of like an all day place because, you know, it's whatever. And then now it's like, it has changed hands. And so the idea of a Jewish deli, I mean, I'm not familiar, but just like concept wise, it's more than just the concept. It's more like community, right? It's just like, and the placement of that concept in River North by East Bank Club is just like, okay. But I feel like where you're at, it feels more communal.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But I feel like,
but that's also a challenge, right? Because
you
want to be anchored in community. You want to be a part of the culture of your environment.
I do feel owned by the neighborhood in a lot of ways. Not in necessarily a bad way, but it is so interesting how many people come in and they're always like, I live across the street. I'm like, how many houses are across the street? There's so many of you. I'm like, also ComEd is across the street. What are you talking about? But it is something we're definitely like, I always wanted to be a neighborhood spot, and I feel so fortunate that I have the location that I have mm-hmm. because we are so innately just a neighborhood spot.
It's and beautiful, and I love it so much, and I wish you. I was closer.
But yeah. it is something that's really cool, too, where the public got to watch us open. They were very much a part of the process because of how slowly we did, like, a soft open for a year and a half, which is, you know, not common. And so they got to, like, the public gets to be like, I remember when you were selling loaves of bread out the side door and had to mm-hmm. knock and Venmo you money for a loaf of bread. And I'm like, cool. That's yeah. great. Like, I mean, there's been so many iterations of what Jeff and Jude's is. Like, it's a different restaurant every few months, and very similar in the way to, like, what Big Kids is. And, like, mm-hmm. when I talk to Ryan.
Hi, Ryan. Shout out to Ryan. Shout out to Big Kids.
I always feel so bad when I see, like, the other pandemic small business owners around, because I'm like, let's just talk shop at each other. I don't care if you want to or not. And he's always just like, oh, yeah, this week we're this restaurant. And I'm like, heard that. Like, it's always.
And fucking next week they're opening up their timeout spot.
Which I think is so fantastic. I'm so happy for them because, like, they will just be pushing sandwiches. Mm-hmm. And I do think that the concept of Jeff and Jude's would also make a lot, maybe more sense even in that kind of capacity of just, like, you're there for lunch rush. And that's what's up. So I'm really happy for them. But also, oh my gosh, it sounds like so much work. I'm so tired already.
Yeah. Just, like, from hearing I'm tired what's just happening, from hearing about it. It's, like, a lot.
Yeah.
But
you gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah, exactly. But also, and you smile don't about it.
But also, you don't gotta do what you gotta do sometimes. So, you know,
you just be doing the things. You just, you know, keep it moving.
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
so mm-hmm. I've wondered this a long time about you, Ursula. Where do you find your inspiration?
Oh, I don't know.
Or is it kind of like?
You mean like for like the type of food I make, or for?
Just, I mean, the tenacity of being a part of the industry, being a leader, the food that you make, like, you know, as we have come to find that inspiration takes on a multitude of forms. So it's like whatever you're comfortable touching upon.
I think that
what inspired you through the pandemic to, like, outside of, you know, bills and the commitment of, like, I gotta open this restaurant. It's like what helped kind of propel you through that and then kind of keeps you going now since the landscape has shifted.
If I had not signed a lease before the pandemic, I would not have opened a restaurant. I 100% am in a position that I wish I was not in, if I'm being fully honest. And
I really appreciate that honesty.
Yeah, it's something where I think that, well, actually, I can't even speak to that truly because I think, again, like I said, I've had ego deaths every single week since I opened. So I think that my former self would have still done it. Being like, well, I'm going to be better than that or whatever. But I think that when I was...
Like, this doesn't affect me. Yes, it does.
Yeah. So, like, when I was 21 years old, I fell into baking completely by happenstance. And I never had thought about having a career in it. And the next thing you know, I'm, like, working in this like, bakery. And I'm struggling because I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm trying really hard to, like, get good at it. And I just, like, had made this really, really specific conscious effort to be, like, I identify as a baker because that's a cool thing to be. And now I'm just going to be that thing. And I'm going to do everything I can to be that thing. Like, I'm basic baker bitch on Instagram. I am this identity of a person. I have a whisk tattoo. Yeah. I am, like, all these things. Like, I am this exact trope of, like, a tattooed brunette girl with bangs, you know? Like, I am one of a type, and I'm going to just, like, be so good at it. And I think I never let myself stop to think about, like, what if I'm not that person? And so mm-hmm. it's 10 years later, I'm now 31, and I had always had this motivation of just, like, I am going to open a restaurant before I'm 30 because I'm special. And I was just like, I'm just going to make sure that, like, I do this before I'm 30. That's, like, my milestone. I had never wanted to open a place, but once I did decide I wanted to, that was the only thing that mattered to me. So I never really actually gave myself time to stop and be like, is this who I am? Is this what I want to be? And so now that it is open, I don't have any intentions of opening another place. I don't really feel the way that I did feel. I'm motivated by caring about the people that work there and wanting them to have a good environment. Right. But my inspiration as far as, like, why I do what I do was just to do it for 10 years. And it's gotten me a lot of places, but it's also put me in the most, like, precarious position I've ever been in, which is, like, right now.
Yeah.
So it's a really complicated feeling to, like, go through, just being like, this thing that matters so much to me and that I identified as for so long, like, it actually I am not a career. I am like a human being, but I presented myself as a brand for a really long time. And that's why I am now Room Temp Leftovers, is because like, I think I was trying to be this image of a person, and now I'm trying to actually figure out what does it mean to just be a person. Because I remember being asked at an interview a while ago what's something I like to do outside of work as a hobby, and I literally didn't have an answer.
Ursula,
yes. I could not think of what to say.
Yeah, I mean, that is...
That's how I ended up with plants.
Yeah. I have a lot of plants, but I'm just like, I couldn't even think of plants. I was like, I don't have an answer for something that's never been asked of me like this. Well,
yeah, and I, like, so me personally, that, like, hits me heavy in the chest because, you know, there have been times to where it's just like, one, like, owning a business, growing a business, managing like just different things, you know, it's just, it's very taxing. But then you kind of find the things that you love about it. So therefore you stay committed to doing it.
Yeah.
Because you're hoping that you get to the next part of loving it. And then also when there are people involved, like I hate, and I think that it's so fucking unnecessary, and I feel like it's wildly manipulative when people refer to, you know, people in which that they work with, specifically in the hospitality industry, as family. Because it's just like, you'll go above and beyond, you know, for us because we consider each other family.
Yeah.
But it's just like the people that I work with, I consider them so close to me that like, I will go above and beyond as much as I can to make sure that like they're taken care of.
Yeah.
And like that has been an inspiration, but also it starts really blurring a line of just like who I am outside of Biko, you know? And it's just like that has a lot of, you know, far reaching elements. And it's like, you know, sometimes you just kind of like, you're kind of like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
but like, not even like what the fuck in a negative context, but it's for the pause of it.
Yeah, taking the pause is like something that I'd never thought to do. And something that's been so interesting about like my partner not being in service industry. And he works in advertising and he's been doing it for a long time and he's really good at it. And he works from home and he gets to do something that's like creative. But then he also like that doesn't, it's not who he is, and he doesn't identify like as his job.
Right.
And he has a really fulfilling life and he gets to...
Do you feel
to,
like the hospitality aspect is just like kind of what like kind of tethers that blurred ecosystem?
Yeah. And it was a choice that I also made was to just like lean into that super hard.
Same.
But it definitely is an all encompassing like lifestyle, especially in Chicago. I moved to Chicago because of that. I love that there was like that kind of environment of like this, the industry by default means service here. Whereas in LA where I'm from, it is like film and TV. Like it's just different, you know? And so coming here, I was like, it's a real like working man city and we all know each other and we're all like, you know, looking out for each other. I mean, obviously more nuanced than that, but like there's this whole like sense of camaraderie of the service industry. And I was like, oh, we're all just trauma bonded.
Yes, 110%.
Like, oh, we all are just like not actually being able to fulfill our lives in a lot of ways. Oh man.
Well, there's that sigh.
I know. It's the beginning of the end.
It is the beginning of the end. As I have said numerous times, do not be upset that it's almost over.
Yes.
Be glad that it happened. Ursula, how can they find you on the interwebs, or tell them that don't find you?
Yeah. Also that.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about it like 9 times. The restaurant is at Jeff and Jude's, JeffandJudes. So that's there. I'm Room Temp Leftovers because I am no longer Basic Baker Bitch, and that is a true delight. Look forward to seeing no content about food on that Instagram. I am really excited to just do whatever I want and not feel nearly as curated as I had to feel or made myself have to feel for the past decade. So, yeah, that's maybe I'll go private. Who knows?
Yes, exactly. It's like don't.
I'm just gonna post weird carousels of memes that I find. Maybe I'll be a meme lord next. I don't know.
I mean, you have the content to do it.
Yes. Well, in closing, Again, I'd like to thank our wonderful partners here at Blind Barber Chicago for hosting this necessary conversation. Also, a shout out to the Garnet crew for their beautiful offerings featuring Ritual Beverage. So thank you again to Garnet as well as Ritual Beverage for the support. Also, shout out to Marcus for all things production and editing. So thank you so very much for helping us there. Also, shout out to Cortez on the documentation crew. And I mean, as everyone knows, I am Justin Arnett Graham, and you can find me on Instagram at This Is Biko. And stay up and stay golden, because y'all are worth it.
And my name is Nereba Shepherd. You can find me at Rebaru on Instagram. You can also not find me. That's cool too. But remember to check out at Terms of Service Podcast.
Also that.
And have a good one, y'all.
Peace.